While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the Radio News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon to you, Namibia, and a warm welcome to all our listeners as you're tuning in from across the country and, of course, beyond the borders of Namibia. Now, thank you for choosing Eagle FM, the home of insightful conversations and a meaningful national dialogue. I am your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and this is On The Radio News Analysis. Of course, it's Friday, the 23rd of January, 2026. Now, as Namibia closes out the week, the national mood remains one of reflection, heightened expectation, and increasing public scrutiny across government institutions, communities, and households. Conversations continue to deepen around how decisions are made, how public services are delivered, and how leadership responds to the everyday realities faced by citizens. From governance and accountability to infrastructure readiness, economic resilience, food security, water security, and community safety, thus issues remain central to public discourse and continue to shape public trust in this critical period of the country's development. Now, this is On The Radio News Analysis, your trusted platform where headlines meet context and where national stories are examined beyond the surface. Here, we don't just tell you what's happening. We explore why it matters and what it means for you. Now, through our live stream platforms, we bring you real-time updates on current affairs, politics, business, health, technology, and community developments, ensuring you stay informed wherever you are. From 1300 hours to 1430 Monday through Friday, we deliver credible journalism, expert voices, and thoughtful analysis grounded in the lived experiences of Namibians. Now, today's program, we turn our focus to key national and regional developments shaping the day. Of course, including public service delivery pressures, emerging economic indicators, agricultural and water security challenges, and community safety concerns, and what they signal for the road ahead as the country prepares for the weekend. You can tune in on all Eagle FM frequencies, stream us live via the Eagle FM website, or download the Eagle FM app and stay connected by subscribing to our WhatsApp channel, that is by texting 083 pardon me, 081-200-4144 and stay connected for breaking news, discussions and audience polls. So stay informed, stay engaged and stay connected. This is On The Radar News Analysis, your reliable partner in news and national conversations. Now let's turn to today's top stories. The Erongo Regional Council has conducted an internal induction program for its newly elected councillors aimed at familiarizing them with the functions, the roles and responsibilities of the council. The induction, held under the theme One Region, One Vision, sought to strengthen coordination, accountability and effective service delivery across the Erongo region. Officially opening the program, Erongo Governor, that is Natalia Guagasis, urged councillors to embrace unity and effective leadership in executing their mandates. She emphasized the importance of working together to ensure that development initiatives respond to the needs of local communities. But now we have a scheduled commercial break popping up. Let's take a listen to that and we'll be back to continue with our news analysis. Do stay tuned right here on The Radar News Analysis.
Spend less and get more with budget beaters at WB. Get a 2-liter Rietfontein juice for only $36.99. 5 kg nice rice for just $87.99. 4 kg Kadila chicken portions for $189.99. And 2 kg Sunlight hand wash powder for only $57.99. See more month-end specials at Vurmanbrock.com. We care.
So, Erongo Regional Governor Natalia Guagasis officially opens the program, urging councillors to embrace unity and collective leadership in executing their mandates. She emphasized the importance of working together to ensure that development initiatives respond to the needs of local communities. Governor Guagasis further highlighted that effective governance requires cooperation, transparency, and a shared commitment to improving the livelihoods of residents throughout the region. The induction forms part of the council's efforts to ensure that newly elected councillors are well equipped to carry out their duties and contribute meaningfully to regional development. And on top of that, also the governor spoke about the challenges that the Erongo region is currently facing, I believe in a hope to get the councillors' attention towards them and direct their attention towards them, and of course look to amicable solutions that would then alleviate or remove those challenges. Now let's take a listen to Erongo Region Governor Natalia Guagasis.
Of course, while each of you represents a specific community in your constituencies, you are collectively responsible for shaping the future of entire Erongo Region, Honorable Councillors. Therefore, decisions taken in council chambers echo across towns, settlements, and rural areas. We are not in competition in the chambers with each other. We know our priority areas in our region, and we work according to those priorities. Political leaders must provide strategic direction and oversight, while officials must implement lawful decisions professionally and lawfully. Where this balance is maintained, members of Erongo Region, fellow Namibians, institutions are strengthened. On the other hand, and regrettably so, where it is ignored, service delivery suffers. As the Erongo Region faces complex challenges, including water security, urban expansion, unemployment, and heavy pressure on infrastructure, addressing these issues will require leadership that is informed, leadership that is decisive, and leadership that is responsive. Strategic. Don't do small activity things like your governor is doing. We want to provide strategic leadership. It will also require commitment to ethical conduct, transparency, and prudent management of public resources. At this point, ladies and gentlemen, I want to re-emphasize the need for policymakers to acquaint themselves with all existing policies, the instruments that are there, that govern the regional councils, as well as local authorities, as well as traditional authorities, as well as all the industries that are operating in our region. As a governor, I wish to stress that leadership is ultimately measured by nothing else but by impact, by whether communities feel heard, whether services have improved, and whether development is inclusive and sustainable. Erango region, 7 constituencies, about 260,000 Namibians. Each one of these Namibians, youth, child, rural, urban, must feel your presence.
We are a unique group of policymakers hungry to deliver on the aspiration of our electorate. We are bound by a single responsibility, which is to serve the Erongo region as collective. The induction is aimed at sharpening us to master the internal process in pursuit of excellence. Fellow councillors, this induction will further offer us the opportunity to build trust, not only between the councillors, but also with administration that supports our work. When councillors and official operators partners, grounded in a clear defined role and mutual accountability, the institution becomes resilient and effective. Let us use this induction to establish a culture of understanding, a culture of cooperation, a culture of professionalism, and a culture of unity. The community we serve may never witness our internal deliberation, but they will certainly feel the outcome of how well we work together.
The purpose of this induction is to dwell very much on the internal processes that drives the Erongo Regional Council. It's not just an internal process, but a formality of things that are to be done over the next 5 years. It is designed to sharpen your legislative skills and administrative competencies. Over the day and a half that we have scheduled to undertake this exercise, we'll look at the internal legislative procedures. These are procedures that master the standing rules and orders that guide our daily conduct as a council. We look at the constitutional mandate internally, because the regional councils, if you read Article 110 of the Act, the Constitution 110, it talks about the regional councils. So we'll unpack that constitutional mandate. We'll need to understand the supreme law of the land as our main guiding principle. This will be compounded by other foundational instruments such as the Regional Councils Act itself, the State Finance Act, and all other policy instruments that governs the administration of a regional council. Accountability is one of those primary aspects that we'll look at. We'll learn about the mechanisms for oversight to ensure regional councils' resources are used effectively and safeguarded. As overseers, you will actually hold us accountable on the execution of the instructions, if I can call it that way. This includes my role myself as an accounting officer appointed to manage the council on your behalf. What is it that we can do to ensure that we live by your expectations? There will be a bit of etiquette navigating the complex protocols on your life as a policymaker. This induction, Honorable Governor, Honorable Chairperson, has been carefully crafted and designed to provide you with a comprehensive orientation to the mandate, the functions and systems and operational environment of the Rongo Regional Council. Over the next 2 days, or a day and a half, you'll be introduced to key departments and sectors, including planning, technical and rural services, administration, finance, internal audit, land reform, health, and so many. Education, gender, water supply, information and communication, all these are some of the functions that are delegated to the Rongo Regional Council. Each session is intended to equip the honorable members with knowledge and tools necessary to effectively execute their oversight, legislative and representative roles. As regional councillors, our regional councillors occupy critical positions as an interface between government and the communities we serve. And that was specifically the purpose of the decentralization. And I keep saying that regional councils came in as a port. The port is there, it starts to receive MICT, gender, and all that. So we are not in competition, we are one regional council. So every delegated function becomes part and parcel of the regional council. It's not them and us, but ourselves as the Rongo Regional Council. It's therefore imperative that this induction is not viewed as a once-off event, but as a foundation upon which informed decision-making, constructive engagement, and cooperative governance will be built. The administrative arm of the Council stands ready, honorable members, to support you in the discharge of your duties. And our role as officials is to provide professional advice, implement Council resolutions diligently, and ensure compliance with applicable laws, policies, and procedures. Effective collaboration between the political and administration leadership remains very key and essential to achieving our shared vision of this beautiful region. So I encourage you, honorable members, to actively participate, ask questions, and engage openly with ourselves as your presenters this morning. The true value of this program lies not only in the information shared, but in the dialogue that it fosters and the common understanding it helps to establish. In closing, let me reiterate our collective commitment to the principle of one region, one vision.
And with that being said, let's pause right here, take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly with more news right here on the Reader News Analysis. So stay tuned.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Meanwhile, as of late January 2026, the Namibian dollar has shown signs of recovery against the US dollar compared to its weaker performance in early 2025. It is now trading around a rate of 1 Namibian dollar is equals to 0.061 or between 0.061 to 0.062 US dollars, or conversely, 1 US dollar is equals to 16.12 Namibian dollars, to between between 16.2 of Namibian dollars and 16.50 Namibian dollars. Now joining us telephonically is Dr. Umu Kakoyama-Tundu, an economist, to help us break this down furthermore. A very good afternoon to you, Doctor, and it's a pleasure to have you always right here with us on the radio.
Yes, good afternoon, Happy, and good afternoon to your listeners.
Doctor, it's quite interesting, as I've noticed, towards late December to now January or throughout, that the US, the Namibian dollar, has quite significantly picked up strength against the US dollars. Doctor, kindly get into this in the basics of economics and what could actually lead to this.
Yes, Happy, whenever we are talking about the Namibian dollar, we should think more about the South African rand. That is our anchor economy and that is our anchor currency.
Mm-hmm. Doctor, pardon me. We're just getting started, yeah. And I just noticed there's a commercial break coming through.
Yeah, no, that's right.
Okay, let's just let that one slide and then we'll resume. Why pay more when you can pay less at USave stores? 2 kilograms real good frozen mixed chicken portions for only $109.99 Namibian dollars. 5 kilos top score super maize meal, $62.99 Namibian dollars. 500 grams of Romy 37% fat spread brick, just $13.99 Namibian dollars. And pay $34.99 Namibian dollars for 750 grams U-brand original mayonnaise. USave, where good food costs less. Okay, Dr. Umu, we are back now. You were talking about and comparing it to the South African rand.
Yes, Happy. Whenever we are talking about the Namibian dollar, we should always think about the South African rand, because that is our anchor economy as well as our anchor currency, meaning that whatever is happening to the rand is going to affect the Namibian dollar, because we are pegged one-to-one, and South African economy is the bigger economy. Now, there are a couple of things to come to your question that basically strengthening the South African rand. It is the Fed policy, that is the American Federal Reserve low interest rate regime that they have started under Trump's pressure to pressure them to lower interest rates in the U.S. That means that there won't be any capital flight from South Africa to the United States. It could only have happened if they have increased their rates. Now that their rates that side are lower, money is going to look for good profitable rates, and then they'll stay in South Africa or they come to South Africa. So the risk appetite, that is investment risk appetite, is growing for South Africa, meaning that they want to bring their money to South Africa as well as other investors. It could be you trying to invest in a big factory in South Africa or so. The other thing that the world was fearing of, or investors were fearing of not investing in South Africa, is the GNO, the Government of National Unity, which seems to hold very well. So the stability of that, I think there are problems here and there in the GNU, but otherwise it has held very well over the past year or so. The other thing, energy and logistics. You see, what we have seen are blackouts before, let's say, last year, and now they call them load sheddings. Load shedding affect economic growth through reduced production of companies. And also, you don't want to come to a country where electricity supply is erratic, for instance. I think now we haven't seen that for almost a year, I should say. So all these are counting in favor of the South African rand, as well as also influencing the strength of the Namibian dollar. There are still some down risks going forward. But what we have seen yesterday, the de-escalation of Trump war rhetoric, trying to attack Iran, Greenland, etc., that could have affected the price of crude oil. But what we are now seeing is that that tension seems to be escalating a little, I should say a bit, and we'll see that the price of Brent crude oil is now hovering around $62-$63, which is quite okay. Mm-hmm. So when we import that oil, we are going not to spend a lot of our dollars, and that could make our economies grow, which is going to attract investors. No one wants to invest in a country where economy growth is very low. So I think economic growth is going to pick up. And lastly, you have seen also towards the end of last year, we have seen credit rating agencies upgrading, if I may say so, South Africa a bit to stable. So that is some good news, and I hopefully that is going to hold on like that. Even though sometimes we say a very strong currency can also affect your exports, but at 16 point, let's say $16 Namibian dollars or South African rand to one US dollar is not very high, and I think that can be good.
Dr. Omo, do you think perhaps we could maintain this for a very long time and perhaps even furthermore grow stronger? And what specific things that maybe could help then Namibia to actually strengthen itself against the US dollar that perhaps we, the economists, can do, or Namibia itself can actually leverage itself? And but the question majorly is, do you think we can maintain this for a long time?
Yes, yes. The problem is that there are so much uncertainty, geopolitical and otherwise. Yeah, the global economy could have a shock here and there, but I think overall things looks a little bit up. But as I have also said, we don't want to see a very strong rand, but sometimes because these are free floating currencies.
Yeah.
When things are very okay our side, that is, our economies are growing very well. And when it comes to things like our energy supply, our water supply, and when we come back home to Namibia, for instance, what we should try and do to grow this economy is to try and have cheaper or less expensive energy and water supply. You have seen that, for instance, local authorities and other instances are owing NamWater something like 2. Something billion, I think 2.6 billion or so.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, partly blamed on very high water tariffs. That so if we have such high water tariffs as well as electricity tariffs, what will happen is that we won't attract investors. Investors want to come and make profits, and if the cost is very high, then they won't come. So those are some of the things that both South Africa and Namibia should work very hard on. And also logistics, good railroads, good transportation to Walvis Bay or to Durban, etc.
Yeah.
If we don't work hard on those, then we are going, of course, to affect economic growth, affect employment levels, and sometimes also lead to political instability or unrest because of unemployment and people protesting all over the place, and no one will come to our area. And then, of course, the rand and the Namibian dollar is going to nosedive, meaning that it's going to lose their value.
Now, one thing I've also come to realize is that the Namibian dollar, Namibian currency is very strong also compared to other African countries, which I found very, very interesting that, you know, when you travel to probably even this countries, you tend to be way more richer, obviously, than you normally are. But yeah, just how does that place Namibia then when we compare it to other African countries?
Yes, sometimes a currency is a reflection of your economy and how attractive your economy is, how the level at which it attracts FDI, that is the attractiveness. How much do others want your currency or to hold your currency?
Yeah.
If you have a useless currency that is almost like a toilet paper is even worse than anything else. That is the most important paper that has ever been invented. But if your money is useless and no one wants to hold it, of course, it is going to be very weak. Mm. But sometimes there is also another side where countries devalue or keep their currencies weak so that they can sell more to the outside world. Let's say we hear that one country X in Africa, if you go there with your 2,000 Namibian dollars,
mm-hmm.
you can sleep in a very nice hotel. Happy when you and me run to that country
mm-hmm.
and spend our money in that country.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes a weaker currency is not all that bad. But if it is so weak that you can buy almost no nothing with it in terms of imports, like importing oil, essential medical supplies, machinery, etc., then that is bad. But generally, it's good that the Namibian dollar is not that weak,
mm-hmm.
that we are having the currency that is holding, and it is an indicator of the way our economies, that is South Africa and Namibia, are doing.
Mm, interesting. Now, Dr. Omu, something completely different, and I like how you mentioned it while we're in passing. Yesterday, I covered a story in regards to local authorities and regional councils owing entities or money owed in regards to water and how generally they go after water entities. Some go after households who owe about $2,000, $3,000, $5,000, yet, and cut off their water bill, yet don't cut off big institutions and entities that owe about $500,000 Namibian dollars. And this was brought to light as the Minister of Rural Development, Urban and Rural Development, James Sankwasa, spoke the other time. So, Doctor, from an economic perspective, why is this that which entities are doing very wrong? Because you go after the small fish and yet leave the big shark.
Okay, that is wrong, of course. But I think everyone is struggling. And when you have seen that list of who owe NAM water, what amounts, you'll see that most of those are local authorities. What I think is that we had created unsustainably local authorities. Small towns, you have Kochas, you have Otsinene, you have Okalongo, small local authorities that find it very difficult to generate their own revenue out of, let's say, electricity and water tariffs. And you want them to pay, you want them to do roadworks, you want them to do other things. So definitely they won't have money. And if that is the case, if we go that way, then government should cough up and pay. Because those guys, local authorities, they don't have the money. The other thing is also your priorities. That is culture. Sometimes you pay your other things, go to movies and whatever, and that movies and whatever, I mean, even niceties for local authorities like going on bench marking trips, etc., instead of paying your water bills. So priorities are also very important. And culture, even at households, the first thing that you should try and do is to pay your water and electricity bills. But sometimes you don't just have the money because whole households of 10, no one in that household is employed. Mm. A couple of them lost their jobs during COVID, some of them because of the very high unemployment rate in this country, never had jobs and they have to be carried by their relatives. And poverty, and that is driven by unemployment, that is also affecting households. Now, for you to come and pressurize the weak and leave the stronger ones like government departments, etc. No, that is very unfair. But definitely, what can be done? Water is a basic human right. What can government come up with is to try and see how they can make water less expensive by trying to see how they can assist NamWater to try and bring the tariffs down. NamWater is operating on a cost recovery basis, but some cost recovery doesn't mean it will be cheap. The NamWater will apply through to get a certain tariff,
mm-hmm.
but if it is not politically correct, cabinet won't approve it. They approve mm-hmm. a lower tariff that won't. That will make it also very difficult for them to come up with new water water works, if I may call them that way. And lastly, this government is sleeping on the job. What we mm-hmm. have basically tried for so many years is to try and have another desalination plant, that is cleaning or desalinating, taking salt out of the seawater and try to bring that water inland. And that could make water less expensive and affordable to households as well as to companies. And mind you, that is, as we have said in the beginning, make your economy grow through agricultural projects, through companies setting up because water in Namibia is cheaper, etc.
Yeah. You know, Doctor, I don't know, I begin to ask myself, we get rain, you know, in the beginning of the year, and heavy rain, and obviously this water gets wasted, and maybe we need to get perhaps those who really work at with the storage facilities and all that, what it actually entails or what it requires. I'm always of the opinion, and I hear a lot of people also say the same thing, can't we store more water so that we can be able to then use it all throughout the year, because then obviously we're cutting down also on the fact that water is scarce later on, especially when it hasn't so rained so good.
Yes, Happy, they call it water harvesting, and that is okay. We harvest water in our big dams, if I may say so, but it could be done at a very local level. But mind you, that water needs to be cleaned. It won't just come straight to you. And that water needs to be transported. And that water, because of our very intense heat, can evaporate. That water, let's say we have water somewhere, it should be transported, let's say, to Vent Hook, to be stored underground. You cannot store water just in the open like that.
Mm-hmm.
You should try and store it underground. And what do you need? Electricity to pump that water. And electricity is also very expensive. So it's a catch-22, but it can be worked on with political will, with the right priorities, trying to not spread ourselves very thin when it comes to development objectives, but say, let's make water, cheaper water and electricity a priority that can be done.
Mm. Interesting. Indeed. Dr. Omu, I always appreciate your time with us because you always educate us. I learn one or two things whenever you do speak to us right here on the Reading News Analysis. So thank you so much for making time for us.
Oh, great pleasure. And thank you for having me.
Okay, Dr. Omu. Bye-bye. And there you had it from Dr. Omu Katundu. Kakule Matundu, and he is an economist. And obviously, we're talking about the US dollars and other economic aspects of Namibia. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. This is On the Radar News Analysis. Now, opinion and contribution is also very much highly valued and appreciated right here on the radar. So should you have a question, a comment, or an opinion you want to ask, 083-288-401 is the number that will get you in studio. That is 083-288-401.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
And we are back now. Joining us in studio telephonically is Teopolina Ishitile, a parent who has been looking for placement for her child for the past couple of days without any luck so far. Teopo, very good afternoon to you and welcome to On the Reading News Analysis.
Good afternoon.
Now, I understand the frustration that a lot of parents have been going through in regards to trying to find placement for their children's schools. Kindly tell us about your ordeal.
This is so frustrating for a lot of parents like me, because as we all know, like for me, my son is looking for a middle grade, which is like grade 3.
Mm-hmm.
So the system has it that when you are looking for a middle grade, you need to come the beginning of the year, which is January when school is starting. So I went into the beginning of the year looking for that grade, and it was said that there's no space at all. So every single day we keep going to these different schools. I went to about, I think, 7 schools so far, and mm-hmm. all of them, my son is not getting a space for it. They are just saying that it's full, there's no space, and there's no that, or either there are other grades that are being taken. So the frustration comes into way to say that some schools, they'll give you response to say that there's no space, but some schools, they will literally, you'll be there from morning time to whatever time, but nobody's going to give you a response. So it's to say that even though we are there as parents and we are frustrated looking for space for our children, there are certain schools that will tell you that, no, we are only taking students that are from Commerce region. But I'm not looking on the side to say that, listen, what is the reason for why this parent changed their school? Because for some of us, we are struggling mothers. And say, for example, my child was in a school in the north, and I lost a job in between the lines. So I cannot afford anymore the transport that was taking that child to that certain school. So that is the reason why I am changing my child to come to this school, to stay by me and get a nearby school, so that whatever little means that I'm making out of the little business that I'm doing, that is what the child will be eating, and that's where we are feeding from. But now if you're telling me that you cannot take my child because he's coming from a different reason, from a different region, but you are not giving me the reason why you are not taking my child. It's not like my child failed. No, my child passed. Other kids also passed. But then give us a solution to say that, okay, how are we going to help these children? Yeah. Go into it, because now you are referring us to go to the 2nd of Feb. If you look at it, it's like a whole month of January, the child is in the house. Mm. And some of these children, they are so much intelligent that they keep asking you, mommy, daddy, am I not going to school? Why are the schools not accepting us? Like some of us, we go with our children to go search for the school. Because why do we go with the children? We go with them just to make sure that, okay, fine, if they accept the child, let the child start that day. But now we are blocked into these situations to say that they just want children from commerce region. But there are reasons why we are changing our children to come to your school. And if there is no space, can you give us another alternative on how to get our children spaces in different other schools?
Mm, I hear your frustration. Yeah. Specifically, for the many schools that you've gone to, what is the main common thing that they keep telling you as a parent and other parents as well? When, for instance, are they saying come back, or is that we are completely closed, we completely don't have space, or what exactly, what message are they giving out there?
Okay, so different of them, they are giving different reasons. Some of them strictly, like I can state it, like when I went to Faith strictly just saying come back on the 2nd of Feb. They are just saying they are fully occupied. Literally, there's no space for a child, all right? And then I went to Mandume, they are saying the same thing. I went to Bethel, they are saying the same thing, but they are having space for other grades. I went to Tobias Hanyeko only had space for grade 2, grade 6, and 7. And they are saying also come back on the 2nd of Feb. And then I went to all other different schools, like some of them I can't even remember their names now, but I went almost to 8 schools just looking for a grade 3 space. But they are all just saying that come back on the 2nd of Feb. But now to some schools, they'll tell you that, listen, the space is limited. So now what happens to us, the parents, or what is cutting us down is the fact that I will go there Monday as a parent looking for a grade 3 student, right? And I will not get a space. Yeah. But Tuesday when I go back, I will hear a different parent that I was with on Monday that they got for their child. Are you seeing? And then it will frustrate you as a parent to say, but I was also there. I came in the morning. Maybe I even slept there and I didn't get an answer. But this parent that went there in the afternoon is answered. So what leads to this? So I got to understand that according to my investigation is that most of them, what they are doing now, it's a matter of if you have the money, your child will be accepted. If you don't have the money, your child will not be accepted. So it's a whole thing that is like,
if you have the contribution, that's what they call it.
Yes. But then it's not all of us that can afford that certain amount that you are asking us now. As we know, it's January, and some of us are just businesswomen. Let's say maybe I sell fat cakes and fish. So literally, there is no customers now. And if I'm saying that I have a $200, and you're like, no, I can't give you the form. I need a full amount. So basically, I'm going to lay low. And then the other parent that has a full amount, their child is going to be accepted. But if the government is saying that school is for free and every child needs to go to school, then you need to look at it on both sides.
Of course. And I remember last year, I did try to get hold of the minister, to get her opinion on this particular one, but then I didn't succeed in doing that. But I do remember last year when the minister herself, Sanet Stiankam, actually had said that parents should not worry, but that all the children will get school placement eventually as time goes by. And I think at this point, I could only just counsel you and advise you to say, perhaps wait until the the 2nd of Feb, for some schools, reason why they do actually normally say that is so that they can see which children are not coming back and which one are not coming back. They usually want to give the parents ample time. You know, some parents remove their kids from certain schools and may not even have the time or even think about going to a particular school where their child was schooling last year to say, my daughter is not coming back. So they do generally give them this ample time to say, okay, let's see. Perhaps maybe they were delayed for particular reasons, maybe transport or maybe illness or whatsoever. But then let's give them ample time and then they return. So now when such a certain time, then perhaps lapses, although they do leave room for special consideration, then that's when they give those spaces to other parents. So I think at this point, I would really just encourage you to be patient, but also appreciate your effort as a parent going out to look for school placement for your child. And also, Tiapo, one thing I want to actually highlight as we have this conversation, I've noticed that I think in certain parts, education of maybe in certain parts of the world, let me put it like that, there are times where education is not really that emphasized, you know, but then I'm seeing how parents are running around really to ensure that the children get placement, and that shows that parents are eager and are concerned about the education of their children.
Like most parents are really eager to send their kids to school, although the means are not there. And every parent to say is that they want to see their children succeed. They want to see their children in school so that these children can be the future of tomorrow for them to help their parents out, okay? But then the thing is that one thing that I've observed is that as much as the government is trying its best on the ground system, the government is like the government gives information out, right, to say education is free, do not buy this, do not do this, give this, don't give this, and everything. But then on the ground, on the school ground itself, it's a different thing. You see, so it frustrates a parent when you want to send your child with the little means that you have, but your child cannot be accommodated with that little thing that you have because of ABCD reasons, you see. Because if I have to observe this year alone, a lot of parents are interested to send their children to school. And they look at different things to say that, okay, fine. If I can't get a child, my child at the nearby school where I live,
I don't need to pay transport.
Yes, where I don't have to pay transport. Because these are one of the reasons why parents look at, or where they look at, to say that, listen, I'll send my child to Tobia Sanyako because I live in Okoriangava. So it's like a more of a walking distance for this child. It's not really that far. Because sometimes when you send your child at a far place and you cannot afford the transportation for that child to go there, it's also another frustration again on the parent and on the child. And that is where you find a lot of children, they'll be like, I don't want to go to that school anymore, or it's too far, or get me another school, you know, because it's not only from the parents, it's also from the children. Some children, the reason why they are moving from one school to another is because of the distance barrier, you know. It's the distance barrier that is making these children to change, because now the child will be like, I cannot be walking 30 kilometers to go to school. It's very dangerous. Sometimes some of these children, they have to wake up at 5 a.m., which is very, very dangerous. And in the time that we are now, it is not safe anymore. So imagine this child is a girl child, let's say, and this child is walking all alone from 5 a.m. So what are the risks there? There are a lot of risks there, you know, and we are trying as parents, we are trying to avoid this risk. That's the reason why we are trying to put our children at schools that are nearby their homes, just to avoid some of these rape cases, children being snatched away.
Kidnapped,
and, you know. Yeah, you know, and we are trying to avoid all these things. So if the government can look at all these things and all these reasons, as parents we are giving, these are some of the reasons why we are changing our schools from different schools where they are. Either it's the distance, or either it's just the security of the child also. Maybe the child was living with a certain auntie and the auntie is just not treating the child anymore. These kids, they are now grown. They report back to us, the parents. So you have to look at it as a parent and go like, okay, if my child is saying they're not being treated there, what can I do about it? I just have to change the school. But now it frustrates you when you want to change the school and the child is not getting a space.
Mm, I hear you, Tiapo. And yes. I certainly do wish you all the best in finding school for your child.
Yeah.
Yeah, but keep the optimism.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And I'm certain that a lot of other parents are listening, also sharing the same frustration to say we want to find placement, and especially when you're also going to be busy as a parent yourself and you just want to get them in school so that when you are at work, your mind is rested also knowing that the children themselves are at school. But thank you so much for making time for us, Tiapon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Bye
for
now.
All right.
And there you had it from a frustrated parent also trying to secure school placement for her child. And of course, I'm sure this is an ordeal, pardon me, of many parents. Yet, do not despair, because just eventually, before you know it, you'll find placement. And of course, no parent wants to have taken their child from a completely different region just to have to send them back, which is not what they wanted. But let's be optimistic and perhaps return back to those schools that have told you that come back on a particular date. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here. Take a trip to the marketplace.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. And now for some economic indicators before we get into news beyond the borders of Namibia. Now, of course, $1 today is equals to 16.15 Namibian dollars. And 1 Swiss franc is equals to 20 Namibian dollars and 43 cents. £1 sterling is equals to 21 Namibian dollars and 84 cents. $1 Australian dollar is equals to 11 Namibian dollars point 07 cents. €1 is equals to 18 Namibian dollars and 98 cents. £1 Botswana pula is equals to 1 Namibian dollar and 22 cents. Now, that's what we had for you in terms of economic indicators. Let's now cross over to news beyond the borders of Namibia. Starting off regionally, then we move over to continental news. Thereafter, you can, of course, expect international news. Starting off in South Africa, where South Africa is set to step aside from the G20 during the United States presidency. Interesting move America, on the other hand, or the United States, seems to have not really been appreciating South Africa hosting or being the leader of the G20.
South Africa's Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana has confirmed that the country will step back from its G20 engagements during the United States presidency of the grouping. Speaking at the World Economic Forum in Davos on Thursday, he described the decision as a temporary setback. U.S. President Donald Trump said in November that South Africa, which in 2025 became the first African country to chair the forum, would not be invited to U.S.-hosted events. His announcement came after months of escalated tensions between the two nations, with Trump falsely claiming there was a white genocide in South Africa. Godongwana on Thursday downplayed Pretoria's decision, saying it was not because the Americans can chase us out, but because Washington will not accredit its delegation. He said Africa's voice would still be heard at the G20 through the African Union, and that he didn't believe that Britain, the 2027 president, would exclude South Africa. The country will host the World Economic Forum Special Africa Summit in April next year.
Western Cape wants a fire, water and crime declared as disasters.
is fighting fires on all fronts. Actual fire, water, and crime. The Western Cape government is now seeking provincial disaster classifications to bolster emergency efforts.
We went through all of the presentations on water specifically, and that has been agreed that because of a number of our towns that are in real dire straits with water, that we'll declare a disaster for them. Gnesna being probably the one most at risk, but I mean Gnesna, Cunderland, Beaufort West, we've got a number of secondary towns that could be at risk because the Weather Bureau are predicting a way longer and drier season, much later rains starting.
The over 600 fires since the end of 2025 have had a devastating impact.
We've had endless fires because it is so dry, and so that's the second request of disaster declaration on fires. That enables us to spend money on this disaster. Our budgets have dried up already in that space, so it enables us to put management across in those two sectors, water and fires.
Wendy says his cabinet has taken note of calls for violent crime in the Western Cape to be declared a disaster.
Treating the gangsters and the extortion, the multiple murders, it is absolutely shocking. And we've had a number of requests from individuals and organizations for either emergency declaration or a disaster declaration. Legally, because we don't have a competency in that space, we have an oversight role. So we can't legally declare that, but what we have done is agreed that as cabinet, we will send those applications to the Minister Slabisa, who is responsible at a national level for disasters.
The Premier says he will be meeting Acting Police Minister Feroz Khachalia on the 5th of February about lasting solutions.
Let's cross over to Mozambique, where Mozambique floods have displaced thousands of people.
Mozambique is reeling following the devastating floods that have killed people and left widespread damage to roads, bridges, and other key facilities. The United Nations says it's on the ground as people desperately need aid.
90% of the people in Mozambique live in adobe houses that basically melt after a few days' rains. Health facilities, roads, and critical infrastructure are also impacted. So far, the most affected province is Gaza, where I am today, with 64% of the affected people.
Authorities estimate that over 400,000 people have been impacted, and 30,000 houses have been partially or completely destroyed in five affected provinces.
From Mozambique, our OCHA colleagues tell us that more than 500,000 people have been affected by recent floods in southern and central provinces. Heavy rains since mid-December have caused widespread flooding in the provinces of Gaza, Maputo, and Sofala. Authorities report that more than 510,000 people have been affected so far, with major damage to health facilities and roads. Nearly 5,000 kilometers of roads have sustained damage across nine provinces of Mozambique, with the main road connecting the capital, Maputo, to the rest of the country now inaccessible. Supply chain lines are significantly disrupted, and authorities report the loss of more than 27,000 heads of livestock. The government is leading the response. On Saturday, it formally requested UN support for search and rescue operations, preventative evacuations, damage assessment, and the provision of temporary shelters. Evacuations continue, and 50 temporary accommodation centers nationwide are hosting more than 50,000 people. We and our partners are scaling up life-saving assistance, focusing on easing overcrowding in accommodation centers, particularly in Gaza province, as assessments continue in hard-to-reach areas.
The UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, is keeping a close eye on the situation in the southern African country.
Of particular concern are waterborne, always the combination of waterborne diseases and malnutrition, which can often prove lethal. Even before the recent floods here in Mozambique, around 4 out of every 10 children were experiencing chronic malnutrition. And so this renewed disruption to food supplies, to health services, and to care practices threatens to push the most vulnerable children into a dangerous spiral.
Some countries in southern Africa have been hit by frequent weather-related disasters that scientists say have been exacerbated by climate change. Kyle Kumalo, SABC News, Johannesburg.
Morocco, on the other hand, rolls out national AI strategy.
The Jezeri Initiative is a nationwide AI network linking universities, startups, and public institutions. Officials say it aims to create 50,000 jobs and train 200,000 students, positioning AI as a long-term engine of growth.
The Jezeri networks, in a few words, are about connecting scientific research to the market and producing world-class made-in-Morocco artificial intelligence by building on academic research, startups, SMEs, the public and private sectors, and of course, incubation, scaling, and technology transfer structures.
As it sharpens its focus on AI, the North African country is drawing global tech events like the World Advanced Manufacturing and Future Mobility Morocco 2026, creating new opportunities for startups to showcase homegrown AI talent.
We are very pleased to be able to announce the first time ever we're bringing this event to Morocco. And we have selected Morocco as it is the start point for the advancement into Africa, Europe, and a pinpoint for everyone to be working and advancing.
The Mefqoudat platform illustrates Morocco's growing AI ecosystem, where startups use advanced technologies like AI and geolocation to deliver practical solutions, supporting the country's strategy to unlock more than $10 billion in economic value from AI.
With Mefqoudat, we're offering two solutions, one for B2C, for general public. They will be able to look for their lost items and connect with the people who found them easily. And for B2B, we're offering it as a SaaS powered with AI always. And it helps B2B large venues like airports, train stations, and even government departments and administrations to manage easily, quickly, with a fast way, the management of their lost and found departments.
By turning research into real-world innovation, Morocco is betting on homegrown AI to drive jobs, growth, and long-term competitiveness. Adnan Shawishi, CGTN.
Meanwhile, the U.S. funding has cut impact health program staff across Africa. Let's take a listen to that.
We caught up with Dr. David Hawaya, a health financial expert who works as a senior research fellow at the University of Nairobi's Center for Epidemiological Modeling and Analysis. He has just concluded an analysis on the immediate impact of external funding withdrawal on Kenya's health sector, commissioned by the country's Ministry of Health.
For us to be able to see the impact, let's go back and look at what is it they have been funding. The external funding generally has been about 45%. But when you look at the external funding, the U.S. government has been contributing about 60% of that. So ideally, what we are saying is that if they stop, we are definitely going to be affected in many fronts, including the strategic diseases like HIV, TB, malaria.
Here in Kenya, external assistance supports life-saving commodities, thousands of health workers, disease surveillance systems, vaccines, and nutrition programs. Hawaya's team calculated what funding will be missing and what services it paid for. The result, a multi-million dollar gap. Funding for HIV has fallen by $112.1 million in the 2025-2026 financial year. Tuberculosis funding has also dropped by $107.7 million. This affects testing, treatment, and tracing, the backbone of TB control. Malaria funding has fallen too, though less sharply. Vaccines face a shortfall of more than $23.2 million. Hawaya warns of the long-term impact.
Some of these things, we may not see the impact immediately, because if you don't take medication today, it doesn't mean you die today. The effects may come much later. So what we are saying is that for the immediate impact, we see a decline in funding. But in terms of the health outcomes, Those are things which come like now, what we are talking about 1 year now down the road.
But the largest gap is not medicine. It is people. Thousands of health workers hired under donor-funded programs are paid through external assistance.
Some of the facilities have been relying on US-funded staff to the tune of 80%. You go to a facility with about five staff, four of those staff are funded by the US government. So when they stop, there are two things that will happen. Either the staff continue to work without pay, or this staff look for something else to do.
Experts have outlined urgent options: raising domestic health funding, integrating donor programs into routine care, including essential medicines in health insurance, working with private suppliers to lower costs, exploring new financial tools from health bonds to targeted taxes. But none of these are quick fixes.
We've had what we call verticalized programs, HIV program. We have a HIV doctor, a HIV nurse, a HIV clinic, and so on. Those things are now going away because what the government have realized that they need to integrate services so that instead of having a clinic for HIV, they have a clinic to offer healthcare. So you go there, you get all the services. That way, they end up saving on human resources.
For most African countries, the question is no longer whether external funding will fall, but whether health systems can survive when it does. Enoch Sikolia, CGTN.
TikTok finalizes deal for U.S. joint venture in order to avoid a ban.
TikTok's Chinese parent company ByteDance says it has finalized a move to avoid a ban in the U.S. The deal will create a new majority American-owned joint venture aimed at protecting U.S. user data. It's a major step after years of scrutiny by President Donald Trump, who in 2020 unsuccessfully tried to ban the app over national security concerns. In a post on Thursday, Trump said he is, quote, so happy to have helped in saving TikTok. He also lauded the deal, thanking Chinese President Xi Jinping
TikTok
for, quote,
has finalized-
working with us and ultimately approving the deal. The TikTok USDS joint venture will be responsible for securing U.S. data and apps and TikTok's recommendation algorithm. Under the agreement, American and global investors will own 80.1% of the venture, while ByteDance keeps the rest. Tech giant Oracle, private equity group Silver Lake, and Abu Dhabi-based MGX will serve as managing investors, each holding 15%. A White House official says both the U.S. and Chinese governments have approved the deal. The venture will retain and secure TikTok's algorithm using only U.S. data, which will be secured on Oracle's cloud system. Reuters sources said last year that ByteDance would still own TikTok's U.S. operations, but that control of data, content, and algorithms would shift to the new venture.
TikTok has finalized a deal to allow its American business to continue operating. The app was due to be banned in the U.S. this month if its Chinese owner, ByteDance, failed to sell its operations in the country to U.S. investors. So let's get the latest on this breaking story now with our technology correspondent, Lily Jamali. Lily, it's great to see you. What more do we know about this deal and the investors involved?
Well, a lot of what we're learning today is information that had been floated in recent weeks, but we knew that today was going to be the closing date on this deal, and now it is confirmed. So we can say with certainty now that the U.S. assets of TikTok are now held, majority held, by Oracle, the cloud computing giant, which is run by Larry Ellison, as we've talked about before, a close political ally of Donald Trump's. Other entities that are going to be taking part in this purchase include MGX, which is an Emirati investment firm. And when you look down the list of who is going to be on the board of this new U.S. entity, there's a lot of investment firms, Silver Lake, TPG, Susquehanna International, and others. What this announcement today does is, you know, finally kind of put to rest all the uncertainty that has been clouding TikTok here in the United States with its 200 now million users, puts that uncertainty to rest. This U.S. entity is now in the hands, majority hands, of American investors.
And Lily, remind us the background to all of this, the ban that we saw put in place, and how President Trump has reacted.
Right. So this all stemmed from a law that was passed overwhelmingly on a bipartisan basis by Congress in 2024. It was signed into law by then President Joe Biden. And the Supreme Court actually stepped in, you might remember, early last year and unanimously upheld this law that required ByteDance, the Chinese owner of TikTok, to either sell TikTok's U.S. assets or to see the app banned. Donald Trump coming into office really scrambled the equation. He has four times now, I believe, extended the deadline that was supposed to first kick in last January, all along saying that there was some sort of deal in the works. As we were getting closer to today, we were starting to get more and more of the contours of that deal. We should note, ByteDance, the Chinese owner of TikTok, will still remain a stakeholder in this new U.S. entity, but it will have less than the 20% that is required under that law.
The yuan surges briefly and traders alert to inflation risk.
The yen jumped suddenly against the dollar on Friday. Traders were alerted to the prospect of intervention from Tokyo to stop the Japanese currency's slide towards multi-year lows. Others speculated authorities may have run rate checks with banks. A rate check is when it's asked what price it would get if it were to sell yen. And it's something Japanese authorities can use to signal their readiness to the market. Japanese Finance Minister Satsuki Kasiyama declined to respond when asked about talk of rate checks, but he said authorities were, quote, watching Forex with a high degree of urgency. Friday's move wasn't as dramatic as when the Bank of Japan intervened directly in markets in recent years. But it happened suddenly, just as trading in London got underway. It came during a press conference by the Bank of Japan governor after the BOJ held rates steady. Traders have been wary of intervention by Japanese authorities as the yen had approached 160 per dollar. The yen has been under pressure since Sanae Takeuchi took over as Japan's prime minister in October. It dropped more than 4% on fiscal concerns and stood near levels that had led to verbal warnings and intervention fears. Tokyo last spent over $35 billion in July 2024, intervening to haul the yen away from 38-year lows.
President Donald Trump's claims about NATO troops in Afghanistan have been criticized. Let's take a listen.
Did you get what you wanted on Greenland?
Donald Trump's frenzied two-day appearance at the World Economic Forum ended with more questions than answers about Greenland. An immediate crisis between the US and its European allies was averted, but there's still uncertainty over the future of the world's largest island. As he returned to Washington, the president was again pressed by reporters to explain what the deal, which he says will last forever, really means.
We can do anything we want. We can do military. We can do anything we want. And it's being negotiated, and let's see what happens. I think it'll be good.
Mr. Trump added that we would know more in 2 weeks, another deadline from the president to find out whether this is a deal that everyone can live with. While we wait for further clarification, there is a sense of relief across Europe that the dispute over the island didn't escalate further. Donald Trump dominated the headlines during his time in Davos. As well as Greenland, he launched his Board of Peace initiative, envisioned initially as part of the peace process in Gaza, but with many countries reserving judgment and refusing to sign up, while overnight he continued his war of words with Canada by withdrawing its invitation to join the new body. The president also provoked outrage among MPs and veterans in the UK after claiming NATO troops stayed away from the front line in Afghanistan. His comments came during an interview with Fox News, in which he reiterated his suggestion that NATO would not support America if asked.
We have never really asked anything of them. You know, they'll say they sent some troops to Afghanistan or this or that. And they did. They stayed a little back, a little off the front lines.
UK was among several allies to join the US in Afghanistan from 2001, when it invoked NATO's collective security clause after the attacks on 9/11.
It's an absolute insult. It's an insult to 457 families who lost someone in Afghanistan. How dare he say we weren't on the front line?
Mr. Trump is now back at the White House, leaving chaos, confusion, and much anger behind him in Europe. Peter Bowes, BBC News.
Well, as you heard there, President Trump has faced criticism after claiming NATO troops stayed back from the front lines during the war in Afghanistan. 457 British service personnel were killed in the conflict. The Health Minister, Stephen Kinnock, told BBC Breakfast he was disappointed by President Trump's comments.
Our armed forces are the definition of patriotism, courage, dedication, professionalism. They put their lives on the line to defend our country. And I am disappointed by President Trump's comments, because to imply that we, as a country that has always stood shoulder to shoulder with the United States and the other European NATO allies, have stood shoulder to shoulder with the United States, have taken part in US-led missions in places like Afghanistan and Iraq. 457 British soldiers lost their lives. That is the reality. We always stand shoulder to shoulder with our NATO allies.
Let's speak to our political correspondent, Damian Grammaticus. And Damian, a strong reaction from politicians across the board to the president's comments.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, there you heard the minister saying it was deeply disappointing. He also earlier had said it was plainly wrong. Now, in diplomatic language, that's pretty strong coming from the UK, where there's been a reluctance to criticise Donald Trump too much directly. But yes, other politicians outside government, much more vocal. So you heard Emily Thornberry in the report there, who was saying that this was an absolute insult. From the Conservative side, we've heard disgraceful and appalling. The Liberal Democrat leader, Sir Ed Davey, saying how dare he question their sacrifice, coming from someone who he said avoided military service. And when you look at the casualty figures, it's hundreds of deaths, thousands of injuries for the UK. Other countries too, like Denmark and other NATO countries, proportionately, as a proportion of the size of the country's population, similar sacrifices to those made by US troops.
And with that being said, we have now come to the conclusion after this episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkonana Dingi program brought to you by Luis Shimi. And of course, the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut from 16:30. And also don't forget the Business Economic segment with David Shombe from 1800 hours. And of course, don't forget to tune in on our weekend shows, that is on Saturday and on Sunday, as we bring you very interesting discussions. Tune in if you want to continue listening to the voice, to my voice, please do tune in for Life Lessons from 1900 hours to 2100 hours on Saturdays. From Indafa, happy Juju, it is goodbye, and have yourself a wonderful weekend, and stay safe, drive safely, and be on the lookout right there.